Welcome back to Song Appeal. I'm your host, Hunter Ferris, and for years I've wondered, why do we like the music we like? So in today's episode of Song Appeal, Tracy Goodwin, a vocal coach who specializes in the psychology of the voice, is going to show us how different vocal styles can affect us psychologically to make us like or dislike a song more. You can find the full transcript for this episode and the show notes at songappealofficial.com/Tracy Goodwin interview. If you're not sure how to spell that, that's Tracy, T as in Tom, R, A as in apple, C as in cat, Y, Goodwin, G as in goat, O, O, D as in dog, W, I, N as in Nancy, and the word interview. Again, that's songappealofficial.com/Tracy Goodwin interview. And now, here's Tracy Goodwin.
Thanks a lot, Tracy, for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. Just to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Sure. I am a voice and speaking coach, which a lot of people say, what does a voice coach do? And basically, my methodology is called psychology of the voice. And I help business leaders and actors around the globe connect back to their real voice so that they can speak with confidence, captivate the room, and really use their voice, their most powerful tool, to touch us on an emotional level so that they build stronger connections, they captivate the room with everything they say, and they really make a bigger impact with their message.
Oh, I love that. Okay, this is going to be fun. Is your work more focused on the psychology that a speaker needs to have in order to have the voice he wants, or is your work more focused on the psychological effects that certain voices have?
Part two, and I want to make an adjustment to what you said about the first thing, and put it in the perspective that I come from. My methodology is called psychology of the voice, and this is what I've seen to be true, Hunter, for the last 28 years of doing this. Our voice is crafted and created from the input of the world around us. So let me give you an example. You're 5 years old, and your mom or a teacher or a neighbor says, hey, shut up. The subconscious mind takes that information in. The subconscious mind is trying to protect your heart. The voice is the orchestra of the heart. So the subconscious mind says, uh-oh, don't worry, I've got this. And little by little, takes your voice and starts to shut it down. So psychology, from the perspective of the voice story that we've created throughout our life, which starts when we're very young, and then just gets compounded by bosses and relationships and neighbors and people that shut our voice down. So it's the psychology of the voice within us and what we've done to our voice. That's the psychology of the voice piece. But there is a second piece that is linked to that story. We all have aversions to sounds that come from other people. Does that make sense?
Tell me more about those aversions to sounds that come from other people.
Great. So I'll use my own example. I was, ironically enough, raised in a family where I was not allowed to use my voice. And when I did, when I expressed thoughts, dreams, goals, ideas, I was told to shut up. I was told, nobody cares what you have to say. Nobody wants to hear your voice. It was very much that children are to be seen and not heard kind of concept. And my mother always yelled at me. She used a very harsh, loud tone. So my aversion is loud for obvious reasons. So when I jump on a webinar or listen to a podcast or hear a speaker, if they are using push tones constantly, gravitating to the push tones, which are loud and fast, I retreat. Because I can only handle so much of it. So loud is my aversion. Some people have an aversion to soft. Some people have an aversion to pause. There's five elements of vocal variety, and everybody has an aversion to one of them. Now, they may not even realize they have it. All of this is going down in the subconscious mind.
Makes sense to me. Now, why is it that the brain stops listening after 90 seconds of the same tone?
Well, the brain checks out after 90 seconds no matter what. It actually, when I started this work, it used to be 2.5 minutes, and now it's 90 seconds. And I actually read something the other day that now it's down to 9 seconds. Now, I haven't done enough research on that to confirm that, yep, every 9 seconds, the brain tells us to check out. And that's just what we've kind of morphed into. But the brain checks out on a certain tone for two reasons. One is that aversion piece. So if you're yelling, and I use the term yelling, but what I mean is you are using a harsh push tone that triggers in me the emotion of the bad experience, I want out of that. I don't want to feel that feeling. I don't want to go back to that place. I'm irritated by it. I'm frustrated with it. And again, I'm using my own story as an example, but it could be any tone for any reason. You know, it could be something as simple as maybe you spoke slow. Maybe you were from a region and your dialect was slower and you got criticized repeatedly for that. You don't want to feel that feeling of that criticism. So you go faster to avoid it. So when we hear those tones, it brings up an emotion, which is how I can so clearly articulate how our voices touch the emotions of other people and why it's so important. Now, the other reason we check out, there is another reason we check out, and that is because a voice is predictable. You've told me what you're going to do because you're using the same tone repeatedly. So it's predictable. And when something is predictable, our brain says, you know where they're going. You know what they're doing. Why don't you think about your grocery list or what's going down on Facebook or all the things you have to do today?
Okay, so when it comes to aversions, just wanted to make sure that I'm understanding here. Just wanted to make sure that I'm keeping up with you. When it comes to aversions are effectively a response to something that we've had frequent bad experiences with as children, and our brains just got used to responding, for lack of a better word, negatively to certain types of voices.
Yes, that's right. And it generally starts in childhood, but it doesn't always necessarily go, it usually goes back to childhood. But another example is I'll work with somebody who, let's say as an adult, was bullied by someone in the workplace. That person did a certain thing with their voice, and so now the person that was bullied will retreat or even sometimes react when that vocal trigger happens.
Okay. So you were talking about aversions, and you were also talking about how the brain checks out after a few seconds, whether it's 9 or 90 or 250. It's still a very short period of time, unless the voice does something new to get the person's attention back. Here's my big question about that. So my podcast is on the psychology of pop music specifically, and of soundtrack music, because soundtrack music gets pretty popular sometimes. I hear a lot of people who use basically the same tone and basically the same register throughout an entire 3-minute song. How does a vocalist keep somebody's attention while still using the same tone? Or do those vocalists somehow lose people's attention by using the same tone for 3 minutes?
Well, there's two factors there. They can potentially lose because of that same, they may lose their audience because of that same tone. Now, that doesn't mean the audience isn't going to come back. The audience will come back and can come back. Sometimes it's harder to get them back. But, and you're the music expert, not me, but when I think in terms of the voice and how every single tone is an instrument in the orchestra, I think about music, and there are lots of different instruments generally that are playing. You've got a drum, you've got a guitar, you've got a flute, you've got an oboe. Those are creating different sounds in addition to the singer's voice. So you're not just relying on the singer's voice per se. You've got other sounds.
Okay, so if we were listening to a vocal-only track and it were just one singer, and that singer were using the same tone for 3 minutes, we would probably check out by the end of the song. But since there are other instruments that are coming in, coming out, and adding variety to the other instruments, we don't check out of the other instruments.
Correct.
That brings me to two questions. What are the effects of having a lower voice or a higher voice?
Let me set this up. Generally, part of the issue is a constant higher voice or a constant lower voice can, and it's not so much low, but definitely high, can mean the sound is stuck. Many people have their sound stuck. And when your sound is stuck, that goes back to that psychology of the voice where that brain said, I'm going to hold this sound in, I'm going to protect you. There is a barrier between that sound. I call it bulletproof glass. So it's like I can see you and I can hear you, but I can't touch you, which means I can't connect with you. So that's one of the first things that I look at. Is your sound stuck? So if somebody's working in a higher register, oftentimes it means that their psychology of the voice has got their sound stuck up here. If I'm working with someone in a lower register that is not going high at all, they're at like no pitch play, there is a story there as well. And I find that a lot with men. And my research has shown me that links back to when the voice changes. There was a crack, you're 13 years old, everybody laughed, your subconscious mind said, oh, don't worry, I got this. We're never going to use pitch again. Pitch is crucial, pitch play is crucial because it's where the trust is built. Now, to answer your question, higher versus lower, higher tends to affect us, and I'm coming from the speaking perspective, so I have to think through this a little bit from a singing perspective. But if a person stays in a high register the whole time, there is a strain, and we feel that on the subconscious level. There is also a sound that is airier versus solid, where a lower sound, a lower tone, is more solid, which sounds more confident because of the solidity of the sound.
Okay, so having one constant pitch sounds more like you don't really know what to do with your voice, like you only have one pitch, like you don't really have much vocal range. And having a lower voice presents a more confident image. Am I understanding right?
That's right. And it goes back to that stuck thing.
Yeah.
People come and they get up here and they have nowhere to go. It's like, I can't get out of here. So the goal for them is to broaden the range, work in, get them to their real voice first. Because if somebody is up here all the time, that's not their real voice. So we want to get them to their real voice so that they can play the high and they can play the low. With the person who's working in the lower range, we want to be able to build in those pops of pitch because pitch play is so important. The range is the goal. Working from the real voice and then playing the shades on either side is the ultimate goal. And that takes us on the journey and keeps that unpredictability. I don't know where you're going next, so I want to stay with you.
Alrighty. So that begs an interesting question for me. Okay, so I'm thinking of some country singers who intentionally have a very low voice when they sing. But what about on the opposite end of the spectrum? Charlie Puth, Shawn Mendes, singers who intentionally sing a lot higher than their speaking range actually is. What effect have you noticed that giving on audiences when people sing or when they talk a lot higher than they actually talk?
Let me make sure I understand that question. The effect on the audience when somebody works in a higher range?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that, and I'm really putting myself on a ledge by saying this, I think that I have to go back to music is different than speaking because we've got the instruments. And I think that, you know, I will be so bold as to say that I think that higher register in singing, if it is the real voice, which I believe that it is, we can connect to it. But in speaking, like if you sing in a higher range, that is your real singing range generally, right? So that is real. We can connect to it. If you speak in a range that is not your real range, we have a harder time connecting to it. And what I have found, which is really interesting, and this was presented to me years ago, and it really kind of stopped me in my tracks. I had to up my research and get the answer for this. But somebody said, brought up music to me. And why is it with music? Let me see exactly how it was phrased. I don't have any fear of vulnerability when I sing, and I'm able to create my real voice when I sing, but I can't when I speak. Huh. Different components of words. When I, like if I were to sing a song right now, which I'm not, don't worry.
Aww, we were all really looking forward to that.
I hope that's not one of the questions, sing a song. Unless I wrote those words, I'm singing someone else's words.
And it's almost like you're reading a quote aloud.
That's right. But right now, I am in the ultimate place of judgment because you're asking me questions and I'm telling you my opinion and my thoughts and my experience. And that up-levels the whole vulnerability issue, which is where it might just be safer for me to do this, to protect myself. Sorry, did that go down a rabbit hole a little bit?
Just a little, but it gives me a little bit of an idea. So here's a specific example I'm thinking of. Do you know the singer Charlie Puth off the top of your head? Maybe not.
I know the name, but I don't know his sound.
Okay, so he's the guy who sings Attention. You just want attention. You don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new. See You Again. It's been a long day without you, my friend, and I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. That song's about an octave higher than he actually speaks when you listen to him speaking in interviews. Could it be? Maybe. I'm not going to say this is the way that it actually is, but I'm curious if you think this might be how it is. Could it be that maybe the fact that he wrote that song about something that was very personal and vulnerable to him led to him singing higher because he wanted to be a little bit protected in being so vulnerable and personal about it?
It's absolutely possible. And I'll tell you what else is possible. That actually is his real voice. And when he gets into the interview speaking situation, that's where he's protecting himself.
That's interesting. I never would have thought about that.
And, you know, I bring that up because I just worked with a pretty well-known actor. And when he acts, it is his real voice. When he is interviewed, he goes into mode because he's protecting himself in the interview. So when you ask me that question, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. So it could be either.
Well, in that case, I'm going to have to check when exactly is Charlie Puth comfortable in his music and when is he uncomfortable in music, because I like research.
No, I do too. I love it, Hunter. I'm a researcher at heart. And what's really interesting about it is what I find across the board is that when we're put into the position of having to really reveal our thoughts, like in an interview, that's when all the voice barriers come up. Even when I'm working with people and I give them a technique to work on, and because I'm trying to get to their real voice, it's fascinating what voice mask they will throw up. Like all of a sudden they'll start getting really loud, and that's a voice mask protecting them from me getting to their real voice. So I'm inclined, and I haven't studied musicians like you, but I'm inclined to say it's probably closer to his real voice when he sings, But I really like your theory that it's a very vulnerable song and he could be protecting that. I just really would have to research that, hear him. If I could hear him, I could tell you spot on. Any kind of variables still create unpredictability. What creates lack of predictability, and this is what happens with a lot of the people that I work with, is they come to me and everything is like this. There is absolutely no variation whatsoever.
Okay, here's the question. What could a singer do to get somebody to focus on the voice instead of on the instruments? Or rather, what could a song do to get someone to focus on the voice instead of on the instruments?
Well, I think I have to approach that question just like I would approach someone speaking or doing a presentation. The broader the range, the more unpredictability. And I don't know where you're going next. And so you take me on more of a journey, plus each particular range, like each particular sound, touches me on a different emotional level. So my initial thought is play your range. Take me on the greatest journey.
So the more distance there is between the highest note and the lowest note of a song, the more likely it would be that the audience would pay attention during the entire song. That the audience would pay attention to the vocals in the song as opposed to paying attention to the instruments.
Yeah, if you break it down like that, yeah. What is the, first of all, singing in your core range, and then what is the maximum, what are the maximum variables within that range that take me on the greatest journey?
Okay. Can you tell me more about those two things, core range and the variables within that range that take somebody on a journey?
Sure. And again, I'm coming at all of this from the speaking perspective. I have a lot of colleagues that approach all of this work through singing. That's not really how I approach it because I'm so linked to the psychology of the voice story and I want to rewrite the story. But core range, I put it on a scale of 1 to 10. This is how I teach it. Think of 1 to 10. 1 is you're silent, you're saying nothing. 10 is you're an auctioneer. You're loud and fast. I believe that everybody needs to work in a core of 5, which means the range that I'm in, which is a little different because there's real voice and there's not real voice. We work in a 5. The majority of the way I'm going to speak to you is in a 5. It's in a 5 speed. It's at a 5 volume. It's at a 5 pitch, which I guess you could associate with my real voice. But then we play either shades on either side, all the way up to 10, all the way down to 1. So that's the variables. So I go back to that example of, if I talk to you at this rate of speed, and I have no pitch, and I don't get any louder, and I don't get any quieter, okay, I may be at a 5, but I'm giving you no variables, which means I'm missing opportunity to touch you on an emotional level.
Exactly how often do you reference Ferris Bueller when you talk about that? Because every time I hear you talking in that monotone voice, I just imagine Ben Stein saying, Bueller, Bueller. Oh.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that. And, a lot of people work in that range. I call it being in a box. And that goes back to that fear of judgment. I'm really scared to blow it out because what are people going to think? And I'll work with people, and it could be the same for singers, speakers. And when I say speakers, I'm talking about just business people that give presentations or have conversations. There's tremendous fear to break out of that box because what are people going to think if I really show them who I am and I get a little louder and I get a little faster or I get a little quieter? And that's the variables. And there's a lot of fear in going there.
So as people have more range, both in their speed and in their pitch, people are going to pay more attention to their words.
Yeah, it's the journey. See, I think it's a little bit different in music. I haven't I don't like to say things that I haven't researched, so I really have to think about that. But from my work, from my perspective, it is about the journey. I don't know what is going to touch your emotions. And so I need to play my full range to take you on the full journey so that I ensure whatever is going to touch your emotions that I do with my voice is going to happen. And if I stay in this one place, and that is not the place that touches you on an emotional level, I've lost you.
Okay, I'm guessing that if we take exactly the opposite approach, that if some songwriter wants people to focus on the instruments rather than on the voice, that the songwriter can get people to focus on the instruments by giving the singer a shorter range and giving them basically the same speed the whole song.
Well, I'm having to try to understand what you mean by that, that they, so that the focus then becomes on the music, so they would compensate keep the singer more in a box. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. I'm sure there are some times when a songwriter would want the focus to be on the music, not on the vocals.
Possibly. I think that, I don't know that I would say put the singer in a box. I would say that if the focus is more on the music, I have to kind of go back to the levels of journey within the music. I don't know. That's a tricky question for me to answer.
Oh.
I have to really think through that. I think it's possible that the singer could be kept more in a range so that the focus is more on the music. But see, the thing about music is, and this is great, is that all of it works together. You know, so that maybe if the singer works in a smaller range, but they've got this music to support other variables, we may not check out. Where with a speaker, we have to be the orchestra. We have to be the full orchestra. We have to play all the instruments.
Okay. So in that case, hypothetically, a songwriter could get somebody to focus on the instruments by putting more interesting instruments, for lack of a better word, by having more variety of instruments, having instruments come in, come out, have higher ranges, have lower ranges, get faster, get slower, while the vocals stay basically the same the whole time.
Possibly. I think either way, I think either way, any way you look at it, it's about the journey. However you create that journey, whether it's through the singer and their range, or through the orchestration itself.
Well, you certainly know your stuff.
Well, I don't know.
28 years of this.
I don't know.
I do apologize. I'm sorry for throwing so many questions at you that kind of put you on the spot and bring you out on a limb. Don't want to do that to you.
Oh, not on a limb at all. Just have to really kind of think this through, you know, to make sure I give the right answer.
One last question. It's kind of a big one, though. So I'm guessing you've heard a song at least once where you knew the melody, but you had no idea what the words were. And I'm guessing you've heard songs where you know exactly what the words are. Do you have any idea what would get somebody to focus on which words somebody's using rather than on the pitch they're using to say them or sing them?
The first thing I thought of, I remember seeing a meme or something the other day. You see them all the time where, you know, we spent the entire 80s singing the wrong words to songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to go back to connection. What, just like sounds, because just like there's aversions in sounds, there's also connections. The second most powerful tool in the vocal variety toolbox is quiet. And when people use bits of quiet when they speak, they've got me instantly. And I think when it comes to words in songs, it is the same. There are certain words in songs that trigger us, Just like I think that there are certain words in speaking that trigger us, where I think the danger is in speaking is when a speaker gives all the power to the words. Because we need both. Because it's the voice that brings them to life and touches our emotions with what we do with it. So I do believe that there has to be words in songs that are brought to life through the voice that touches us on an emotional level, and so we connect to those words.
It's not about how singers say the words. It's about which words the singer uses and about the audience's experience with those words.
Well, I think it can be both. When you say the words, though, what do you mean by that? How they say the words, is that what they do with their voice when they say them? Is that what you mean? Like, do they elongate the word, or do they go in a higher range? Is that what you mean?
That's basically what I mean, yes.
Right, so that's that, what you're doing with the words. And I think it almost, I know that what is done with the words from a vocal perspective is what has the power to trigger the emotion. The emotion gets triggered, and then we say, oh, I can relate to what he's saying. But the emotion has to be triggered first. So whatever is being done with those words is actually what triggers the emotion. And it's all happening on the subconscious level, and it's split second. But how is it that one person can say one thing and you completely ignore it, and then another person says the same thing, and it's like, oh, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Okay,
it's what they did with it.
It's both how they say it, or in the case of music, the intonation, the pitch, the stylization, and it's the words they say themselves.
Absolutely. I have a phrase that I use, Hunter, the words are everything and they are nothing. It's how you bring them to life that has the power to change me. So they are, they're both important.
Thank you so much. This has been really informative. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners are learning a lot from this one.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. We're going to wrap up real quick. Can you tell us where we can find more about your work?
Sure. You can find me at CaptivateTheRoom.com. And I also have a podcast, Captivate the Room. And those are the best two places to find out more about what I'm doing. And
thanks for listening.
Wonderful.
You can find more of Tracy Goodwood's work at CaptivateTheRoom.com.
All right, thank you so much, Tracy, and have a wonderful day.
Podcast. You can also find links to her work at songappealofficial.com/Tracy Goodwin interview, along with the full transcript for this episode and the show notes. If you're not sure how to spell that, that's Tracy, T-R-A-C, T as in Tom, R-A-C as in cat, Y, Goodwin, G as in goat, O-O-D as in dog, W-I-N as in Nancy, and the word interview, songappealofficial.com/Tracy Goodwin interview. You can also support this podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/songappeal. You can also support Song Appeal on Patreon at patreon.com/songappeal. Again, thanks so much for listening. I'll talk with you soon. In the meantime, have a great day and enjoy your music.